So two volunteers, come on up. Just jump up. This $5 is just burning a hole on this desk, so we got to give it away. And we don't have a lot of time for this either. One more. Michael, okay, good. I was about to pull Michael Lawrence up here. All right, here's what we're going to do, gentlemen. We're going to play an old game show called Name That Tune. So do you remember how Name That Tune works? Right? Step up here like you're facing one another because you're at odds with each other. All right, so I've got a tune in my head, and you guys are going to bid against each other on how many notes you think it will take you to name that tune. We're going to play the best of three rounds. So, Jonathan, you're going to start, and you're going to say, Greg, I think I can name that tune in so many notes. And then if you think you can beat that, you go lower if you think you can beat that. But you always have to say it in that form. Greg, I think I can name that tune in, and you can lower it as many as you want until there's just one or zero. Okay. So, you're first.
Are you going to give us any hints?
No. It's just music. There'll be very recognizable tunes.
Greg, I think I can name that
tune
in three notes.
Three? You guys are supposed to go, whoa.
Greg, I think I can name that tune in five.
No, you got to go lower than three.
You have to go.
You have to go lower than three. No. You're gonna let him have it?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the way. I'm gonna give you two notes. You try to name the tune. Right. If you can't, he gets a shot. And I don't know who. I think you get it if he doesn't get it.
Oh, then. Good. Okay.
Okay. So if both of you miss, I think the. Okay, you ready? Let me get it in my head because this is not as easy as it looks. Okay, two notes. Dun dun.
So if I just guess, do I lose the chance at all? Or can I just throw something out there?
Well, you get one guess.
Mission Impossible theme song.
No. It does sound like Law and Order, though, doesn't it? Dun dun.
I get three notes, don't I?
No, you have. Oh, you do. That's right. Yeah.
Three.
Okay. Dun dun dun.
Yes,
that's it. Good job, Jonathan. Wow. All right. Wait. We're not done. All right, Jonathan won. Trevor, you're a goose egg. It's Tyler. Sorry, Tyler. Tyler, zero. All right, here we go. Let's see. Tyler, you can go first on this one. What are you going to bid?
I'm going to go with five notes.
He thinks he can name that tune in five notes. Okay, so okay, let me get him. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Da 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 da.
Mary had a little lamb.
Okay, you ready, Tyler? You get five, right?
Da
da da da da.
Hey, none of you came up, okay?
Good job. Get after him. Da, 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 da.
Dude, I have no idea. I don't either.
No? All right, what is it? Start the Imperial March. Da, 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 da. So I think, who won that?
Nobody.
Well, no, but who won it?
The audience won.
Jonathan won that, yeah. Because you bid it and missed, and then he missed, and so you get the point. That's the way the rules work. All right, congratulations, Jonathan. You win. We have to move on. Because this was... We're going to spend like a third of our time on an illustration. All right, what we're talking about today is a melodic line. That is what we are talking about. Here's the picture that we hope will stick in your mind as you're thinking about this. Has to do with the melodic line, not so much of songs, but of texts and books in particular, entire books of the Bible. So what I hope you saw from the silly little Name That Tune thing is that every song has a melodic line that organizes everything about that piece of music. And no matter what sort of things you put around that melodic line, as long as that line is there... the song is going to be recognizable. So, for example, when I go da 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 da, that's just me going da 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 da. But you can recognize what that tune is, right? Because there's a melody in it. Da 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 da. However that works. But if you listen to it in the movie, there's a whole lot more going on around that melody, right? There are different instruments and there's percussion and, you know, there's all kinds of stuff happening as Darth Vader walks into the room. But as long as that melody is underlying the whole thing and running through the center of it and holding it together, the Imperial March is recognizable. Same thing with Happy Birthday. You can do Happy Birthday in jazz style. You can do it in a country style. You can do it in, you know, anything you can imagine. But as long as that melody line, da-da-da-da-da-da, is there, you can recognize it no matter what else is going on around the book. So the principle that we want you to take away from this talk is that just as every song has a melodic line, so every book of the Bible has a melodic line, has a unique message. And if we can identify and trace out what that unique message and kind of storyline is of that book, we will better understand what the whole book is about. Now, what that means is that you have to be a great listener to the book that you're studying. So the last few days we've been studying the book of Amos, and hopefully over the course of the last few days and in the prep days prior to that, you've read the book of Amos at least a couple of times, and pieces of it you've probably read a dozen times by now, right? And what we're trying to do is listen so well to the melodic line, to the story, to the unique message of Amos as it progresses from chapter 1 to chapter 9, that when we turn to teach the book, that melodic line is in our minds, and we can sort of trace it in our minds all the way through before we even stand up to teach it. And the more we can do that, the better we can listen to a book and explain what its melody is, the better we're going to be able to teach it. Let's talk about some dangers of not being able to find the melodic line of a book. So what are some of those? I'm just gonna ask you to, like, call them out. We're not going to get into little groups because we got a lot to do this morning. But let's say you've got a book and you can't identify the melodic line of it. You just can't identify what it's about. It seems like a bunch of fortune cookies all thrown together. It doesn't seem to have any sort of a melody to it. What are some of the dangers of a situation like that when you try to stand up and preach that book? That's the big one, is that you'll just misinterpret it. Yeah, you'll think the book is about something, and it'll turn out that it's about something entirely different. What else? Some of the dangers. Yeah, that's right. You'll focus on details rather than the main message. What else? Anything else come to mind? Yeah, you'll absolutely misapply the book because you're focusing on details or because you're focusing on your favorite texts or whatever. You will end up misapplying the book. What else? I think another really important one is that if you can't identify the melodic line as you're teaching, you will discourage your people because they will think that the book has no point because what you're saying about the book really has no identifiable point. And you don't want to discourage your people in their reading of the Bible. What you want to do in your preaching is try to teach your people that reading the Bible is a skill, yes, and it's a skill that can be developed, yes, but it is in fact a skill that can be developed, right? And it's not some hocus pocus that we do up here in the pulpit that they'll never be able to do. Good. All right, so if every book of the Bible has a kind of melodic line to it, right? Some, you know, it might do that. Some melodic lines might look like that. Some might look like that, you know. But if they all have a melodic line, what are some strategies that we can use? Some of you will have heard this talk many times, so you can help us out here. Strategies we can use to start trying to identify what that melodic line or story is of the book. What are some things we can do? Repeated words. Yeah, you can look through the book and try to find repeated words or concepts, which is harder, right? Concepts is harder because you'll have concepts that are repeated, but it doesn't use the same exact words to talk about them. So that's harder, but it's a good strategy to use. Somebody said something down here too. Yeah, purpose statement. So can you think of an example of that in a book where the purpose statement helps us? Yeah, in the book of John, at the end of the book, John literally tells you why he wrote the book. He said, I write these things so that you may believe that Jesus is the Son of God and that whatever the rest of it is. By believing in him, you may have life in his name, something like that, right? And so if you can identify the author kind of telling you this is why I wrote the book, that's going to give you probably several notes on the melodic line, right? So you can be quite sure that John is not writing just to affect an ethical revolution in the churches that he's writing to, right? That's not why he wrote it. He wrote it mainly to unbelievers so that they will believe that Jesus is the Son of God and therefore have life in his name. And that's super helpful in identifying the melodic line. What else? Yeah, it's what we call the macro structure of the book. So in the talk, what was it, yesterday or Thursday when we talked about structure, we were mostly talking about the structure of a particular text inside the book, right? And you can find a micro structure in any text that you're looking at. Depending on the genre, it'll be a plot structure or it'll be stanzas, which is what we've been working with mostly in Amos, in the prophet. The macro structure of a book, though, is not so much that. It's looking at the entire thing and trying to identify the big components that make up that book, right? So if you remember that outline that I gave you yesterday, kind of my read of the macro structure of Amos, I think it exists in three big macro parts that are doing three different things. So that's what macro structure is. Yeah. What else? Any other?
Top and tail.
Yeah, that's a big one. Top and tail. Michael, what does that mean?
You're looking for themes that are introduced in the introduction of the book, and they get picked back up at the conclusion of the book.
Yep.
And then probably then find it that something like your intro and conclusion.
Yeah, so what you're basically doing in top and tail is using this strategy right here of repeated words, concepts, phrases, and you're applying it specifically to the beginning section of the book. Like, we're even talking the very first few verses of the book, and then to the end. And you're seeing if the author of the book tends to use the same concepts, words, phrases at the beginning and at the end. And if he does, then you can be pretty sure you've got a couple of notes on the melodic line. And then, if you can use that same strategy of repeated words and phrases to identify that set of concepts or words in the middle, you're going to have a really strong understanding, or at least a beginning of an understanding, of the melodic line of the book. Anything else? Sometimes, maybe. But I think what you're talking about there is allusions to the sort of macro storyline of the whole Bible. Is that what you're talking about? Sometimes, though, you got to be careful with that, because sometimes you'll have. Let's just say you got the the macro storyline of the Bible right here, right. And let's say in Amos or something, you've got this storyline that's going on, right? Sometimes you'll have allusions inside Amos that are off the storyline slightly of the book of Amos, but they do refer to the storyline of the Bible. And if you identify that as a note rather than just a detail in Amos, even though it may be referring to some huge part of the storyline of the Bible, it can lead you a little bit astray. So you got to be careful with that, because every book's melodic line doesn't land on exactly on the grand, you know, melodic line of the whole Bible. So you got to be careful with that, but sometimes it works. Yeah. What else? There's one really useful one that we haven't mentioned yet. Yeah, that's a strategy for getting to it. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the Uber strategy, right? For everything we've said is, you know, the The strategy for every single tool that we've talked about, structure, context, melodic line, all of it, is just read the book over and over again until it's in your DNA, right? So that's the big one. Still another one, though. Anybody? Yes. Always look for chiasms. Overall tone of the book can help you identify the storyline, melodic line of the book. So here's an example. What is the overall tone of the book of Philippians? Joy, yeah, partnership in the gospel. Paul is just overjoyed about the Philippians. So if the overall tone of the book is joy, partnership, if you study that book and come up with a melodic line that God's judgment is about to fall on Philippi, you know, you've probably missed it because it's a joyful book, right? And the story, the melodic line's not going to be that far off. What's the overall tone of the book of Amos? This guy just got here today, so forget him. It's judgment, right? It's fearful. It's terrifying. I mean, you get the little bump in tone at the end with restoration, but the overall tone of the book is judgment. So if you come up with a melodic line for the book of Amos that's something like, you know, the joy of the Lord is my strength, you know, you've probably missed it. That's not what the book is doing. Okay, so I think you've got the tool here. So what we're going to do is work a couple of examples and use some of these strategies to try to figure out the melodic line of some books. So take a Bible. I think we're going to do the first one together, and then I'll throw a couple to you. So turn over to the book of Jude. It's short. For a thing like this, you can't really try to find the melodic line of Isaiah. That would be really difficult to do in 45 minutes. But we're going to try it with Jude. It's right before Revelation. We're not going to read the whole thing, but we're going to use three of these strategies to try to identify at least the beginning of a melodic line for the book. Now, here's the thing about a melodic line, and I don't want to confuse you about this. We're going to come up with some provisional melodic line, I hope, over the next few minutes. 10 or 15 minutes, something like that, for the book of Jude. I don't want you to go away from here thinking that you can spend 15 minutes with a book of the Bible and just identify with all kinds of certainty and precision what its melodic line is. This takes months of study, right? Just weeks of study. And sometimes, you know, you come back to it and you renovate the melodic line a little bit, you rethink it, you end up, you know, shifting it here and there. This is kind of a lifetime of study, so I don't want to confuse you. I mean, frankly, I'm using notes that I made a few years ago when I preached the book of Jude. I'm using notes that Simeon Trust has given me, you know, to think about this. So there's a lot of stuff going into this, and this is not just me looking at this in 10 minutes and leading you through it. So please don't think that. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at, we're going to use this tool right here, top and tail. We're going to use repeated words and concepts throughout the book. And then we're going to talk about a purpose statement. Those are the three things we're going to do here. So what I want you to do, let's do top and tail first. So what I want you to do is read verses 1 and 2, and then 24 and 25 to yourself right now. And you're looking for repeated words and concepts in those two sections, at the top and at the tail. And let's see what we can come up with. All right, let's start whiteboarding some of this. What do you see there? Keeping, that's right. Yeah, there's this idea of keeping. So to those who are called, beloved in God the Father, and kept for Jesus Christ. That's right. And then 24, now to him who is able to keep you from stumbling. Okay, so there's the idea of keeping. What's being kept in both places? Okay, you, and that would be who more? Yeah, okay, so keeping God's people, right? Or God's people being kept, to put it in the passive. Anything else you see here that can help us? Where are you seeing sanctified there? Okay, what does it say? Okay, that's interesting. Anybody looking at the Greek there? Is it sanctified or beloved? I don't know. Yeah, ESV says beloved. Okay, well, yeah. Yeah, beloved. It's beloved. Okay, so New King James just got that wrong, looks like. Okay, what else? What about concepts? I don't know that there are any more exact words. And in fact, in the Greek, the two keeps there are a different word. They're more synonyms than they are exactly the same word. But what about concepts or tone even of the top and tail? Okay, so you're calling the top and tail a little bit bigger, but that's okay. So contending for the faith. And snatching, yeah. There's that. Any resonance with those words in verse 2? Mercy, peace, and love. Anything? Yeah, and the great joy there in verse 24 too. I mean, mercy, peace, and love, you know, corresponds conceptually, seems to me, to the great joy, you know, at the end. Okay, so now that we've used this top and tail tool, looking for repeated concepts, what do you see here? Like, somebody put that stuff together into an extremely short sentence that might be getting at a melodic line of the book of Jude. We're just working on a hypothesis here, so don't worry about being wrong. Just put them all together into some sort of short sentence.
Through God's mercy, peace, and love, he will keep you, leading to great joy.
Okay, through God's mercy, peace, and love, he will keep you until the day of great joy. Something like that. Okay, all right. What else? Somebody want to give it another shot? Okay, I'll keep you as you contend for the faith. Yeah, all right. So let's just jot some of this down. So maybe it's so at, you know, like this, as you contend for the faith, God will keep you in mercy, peace, and love unto the day of joy. Something like that, right? So, I mean, you see what we're doing here. We're just taking these concepts that are repeated, trying to stick them together into a sentence that makes sense. And then we're not going to stop there. I mean, that's not identifying the melodic line. At best, that's just a kind of, you know, misty, shady approximation of it. So let's see if we can find something else. We're going to look for repeated words and phrases now, not just in the top and tail, but in the middle of the book. So let's work on the idea of these three things, and we're kind of testing this hypothesis here, is what we're doing. And if anything else pops up, we'll throw it on the list too, right? But keep, contend, and then let's just call it joy. Let's just keep talking about it together. So anywhere else in here that you see the idea of keeping, contending, or joy? Just, you can just call them out, verse and phrase. Verse 5. Okay. Yeah, verse 5. The Lord contended for his people. Okay. What else? 21. Yep, keep yourselves. That's interesting. 21, keep yourselves in the love of God. Okay. Okay, good.
Verse 4, designated for this condemnation, is kind of the opposite, but instead of kept.
Okay, similar thing in 6, too. He has kept, not only did the angels not keep their position of authority, so to speak, that's a concept, not a word, but he has kept, God has kept in eternal chains under gloomy darkness, under the judgment. So, kept in chains. And then what did you say? Jonathan?
Verse 4, designated for this condemnation.
Okay, yeah.
Long ago were designated.
Maybe. I mean, it's a little distant, but maybe. Yeah.
9, Michael, contend with the devil.
Okay, all right, good. Okay. Yep. Yeah, that's kind of the same idea as this. Okay. We mentioned this early, but 23 is kind of contending for others. You contend for others. Snatch them out of the fire. I mean, again, that's a concept, right? It's not exactly a repeated word. If we remember that this is shorthand for mercy, peace, and love, in verse 23, what do you have there in this category? Yeah, so show mercy to others. Okay. All right, so looking at this, if we're trying to identify other notes in the melodic line of this book, what are we learning here? What do we see here that's new? So if we had back here, as you contend for the faith, God will keep you in mercy, peace and love unto the day of joy. What are we learning anything else here? Yeah, it's kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like our contending for the faith reflects God's contending for his people. We reflect God, yeah, in that. What else do you see? Yeah, the false teachers is the thing that shows up a few times. And I think what that's helping us see is what we're being kept from, right? So we're being kept not just sort of, as we said here, God will keep you in mercy, peace, and love. But it's that, but it's also, he will also keep you from something. And what would that be? Like the fate of these angels who fell away, for instance, or, you know, the fate of the false teachers.
Would that also be related to the contending that Mm-hmm. Against something, some opposition.
Yeah, I think so. So we're being kept from, falling. Being kept from falling, being kept from false teaching. Yeah, okay. Good. All right, so how does our statement change here? If we're kind of reflecting God and contending, you know, we're contending because he contended. We're not only being kept to something, but we're being kept from something. So, you know, we might just change this to say something like, as you contend for the faith, as God contended for you, God will keep you in mercy, peace, and love from falling to false teaching or something, you know, so you'd have to put it together. I don't have any super clean thing to say here, but you can see you can add a couple of notes to the melodic line like that. Let's look in Jude here for a purpose statement. Does Jude anywhere say why he's writing?
Three,
and what was that? Okay, yeah, right. I wrote you to appeal to you to do what? Appeal to you to contend. All right, so that's, there we go. All right, so we've used purpose statement, we've used repeated words and phrases, we've used top and tail, and even though we're not even going to try to write down a sentence, you know, you can take the notes that you've made and work on this later if you want to, but you can see how what we're doing is pulling together and looking at the book as a whole and figuring out that it has a whole lot to do with contending for the faith, in joy, unto the day of joy, not falling like the angels did, like the fallen angels did, to, you know, untruth and false teaching. And as you see that, you get a good understanding of what the book is going to be about. It's about contending for the faith, right? In joy, to the last day, and not falling, and helping others do that as well. So those are the sort of notes that are making up the melodic line of Jude. Okay, let's do it again, and this time I'm going to give you some time to work on it in your groups. We're going to go to the shortest of the books of the Old Testament, which is Obadiah. So turn to Obadiah, and we're going to see what we can do with this. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to use top and tail, repeated words, overall tone, and maybe macro structure. We'll see how that goes. But let's do Obadiah. So at your tables, I want you to get with your tables, and I want you to read the first, say, four verses of Obadiah, and then the last three verses, 19 through 21. Read those carefully. Make a list of any kind of repeated words or concepts, and then after a couple minutes, we'll pull together and see what we've got. Go. Okay, let's pull together and see what we got here. Top and tail of Obadiah. First four verses, last three verses. What do we see in there that's repeated? Words or concepts that are repeated in the top and tail of Obadiah? Edom, that's right. So Edom is repeated. So Edom is obvious in verse 1, thus says the Lord God concerning Edom, right? So that's important. Where do you see that repeated in the last three verses? Mount Esau. Mount Esau, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I don't know. Some of those other geographical references in there may be also in the land of Edom. But at any rate, you've got Edom mentioned in both of these, Mount Esau mentioned a couple of times in the tale. Yeah. Anything else? Words or concepts?
Just like a contrast in verse 4, it talks about God bringing them down.
Okay. Okay. Maybe. So what happens in, what's happening in 19 to 21, though? To the land of Edom? Yeah, it's being overrun, right? So that's what that means. So when saviors go up to Mount Zion to rule Mount Esau, you know, that's That's going up Mount Zion in Jerusalem to rule the land of Edom. So in both of these things, you have a bringing down of the land of Edom. Like they're being conquered in both the top and the tail. So you have that going on. Anybody notice anything else? So Edom is being conquered, right? What else do you see? Yeah, the nations are there in both. So verse 2, where in the tail do you see that? Yeah, everywhere. It's like a list of, yeah, it's just a list of nations. And they're all overrunning Edom, right? So, okay, so what have we learned about the book of Obadiah? Wait, before I ask this question, raise your hand if you have studied Obadiah in any detail at all. One person. Okay, raise your hand if on the spot, without ever having even looked at Obadiah as we just have, raise your hand if you could have given me a one or two sentence summary of what Obadiah was about at all. Yeah, like the guy who preached it, exactly. Okay. I preached it years ago, and if you asked me on the spot cold about Obadiah, I couldn't have told you much about it at all. I could have said it was a minor prophet. That's about it. All right, so already, just by looking at the top and tail and seeing repeated words and concepts in there, what have we learned about the book of Obadiah? Edom is going down, basically by everybody, right? Okay, so if Edom's going down, there's an obvious question that ought to kind of rise in your mind that the book is likely to answer. Why? Yeah, why is Edom going down? Okay, well, let's try something else. Let's do repeated words and phrases just throughout the whole book. So get with your table and take like 2 or 3 minutes, look for repeated words and concepts and phrases through the whole rest of the book, and let's see if we can start answering the question, why is Edom going down? Go for it. All right, let's see what we got. Repeated words and phrases through the whole rest of the book. What else have you got?
Synonyms for pride.
What's that? Synonyms for pride. Okay.
Gloating, arrogance.
Yep, good. Gloating, arrogance, etc. Good? We'll just leave it at that. What else? What else you got? Okay. Okay. So you've got your brother Jacob. Yeah. So Jacob. Yeah. Jacob, Israel shows up a lot. Yeah. Good. What about specific words or phrases? The thing about these is they can sometimes seem a little bit silly, but they'll point you to things that are important. So you tell me, what is one that seems a little silly, but as you look at 10 through 14, it's just literally at the beginning of every line? Do not, yeah. I mean, that seems so tiny, but what follows every single one of those do nots? Some synonym for pride, right? Do not. It's the Lord is telling Edom, it looks like, don't be prideful about something, right? Okay, so now we're already getting an answer here to the why part. Edom is going down because for some reason they're being prideful, it looks like, toward Jacob, Israel. All right? Any more detail we can get maybe from another kind of silly-looking word or phrase that shows up over and over again in 10 to 14? Yeah, the day. So what's that? Does that look like it's the day of judgment at the end of time? What does that look like? What is that day that shows up so many times? Yeah, there's some day that where something horrible happened, right? Something horrible happened to Israel, to the nation of Israel. And what does it look like Edom did in response? Well, I mean, they gloated, they were arrogant, because something awful happened to their brothers Israel. Right? Yep.
There's a lot of synonyms for taking possession.
Okay.
And they're told in verse 21 Israel will take possession.
Okay. Taking possession. So now you're onto something even, you know, kind of worse. Not only did they gloat and be arrogant over their brothers Israel when this horrible thing happened, whatever it was, but it looks like they even moved in to like take their peace. You know, they moved in to take their own shot at it. Okay, just real quick, what's the overall tone of Obadiah? The judgment. I mean, God is mad, right? I think that's kind of the overall tone. He's mad at Edom. So again, we're not going to try to pull together a solid melodic line, but you've got at least a shadowy understanding just by using these few tools of what Obadiah is about. Now, there was something that happened to Israel. Edom gloated and moved in to take their own piece of the pie, and now God has taken them down. And at the end of it, the nations are going to swarm in and conquer Edom. It's over for them. So that's what Obadiah is about. And in just a few minutes, we've done a lot of good work in figuring that out. Okay, let's take the last few minutes and see what we can do with Amos. It's a whole different animal here. All right, so let's just let, I don't know how far we're going to get on this, but we're going to take 7, 8, 10 minutes, whatever, and see what we can do. So let's do top and tail first. So get with your group, take a couple of minutes. You can decide how long the top and tail are, but let's see if we can see anything that that helps us out. So go for it. All right, what do we got? Top and tail. Any ideas on repeated words and concepts at the beginning and end of Amos?
Israel,
yep. This book is going to be about Israel. That's good. That's important because not all the minor prophets for sure are. Okay, you've got the nations again in both of them. Yep. What else have you got? Okay. So the earthquake in verse what is it, 1, and then you're saying there's imagery of it in verse what of chapter 9. Okay. Yeah. Look at that. Yep. Yep. See, that's fascinating, isn't it? Because at the top and the tail, you've got the earthquake and the shaking of Israel. That's just fascinating. And, you know, knowing a little bit more of the middle of the book like we all do, it's incredible. That's what's happening in this book. Israel is getting shaken down to its core, right? So that helps you understand it. Anything else we want to put here? What was that? The God who speaks, yeah. So that's obvious in verse 2. So roaring. Where do you see that at the end? Yep, verse 15 says the Lord. Yep, 15:13. Yeah, that's right. Good. Okay, let's keep going. We're almost done, but we're going to do any. You'll have to just let your eyes roll over the entire book, but repeated words and concepts through the entire book. So take a minute and jot some of those down. You can just go from memory if you want to. Okay, y'all can work from memory on this. So, what are some of the most repeated words and phrases in the entire book of Amos? Okay, so we got all kinds of synonyms and concepts surrounding the Word of God. That's huge. What is it?
Destruction.
Yep. What else? The house. God. Yep. Yeah, we'll just say, yeah, God. That may be a slightly different emphasis to call him the Lord of Hosts, having to do with the armies moving in. But we'll just go with that for now. What else?
Uh,
What is it? Okay, now, this is similar to Obadiah, right? Because if Israel is to be shaken by the word of God, again, the question that comes up is what? Why? And when you mention the poor, we might be getting to an answer to that question. What else? Maybe even in that realm right there. Yeah, oppression, justice, righteousness. Yep. Okay, good. Okay, so let's just stop there and talk about what we're learning. Back here, we learned, just from looking at the top and tail, Israel is to be shaken by the word of God, right? As we look at repeated words, we have those concepts repeated. There's the word of God. There's destruction. There's the house, which is another interesting image, you know, connected to the earthquake, right? So the house is coming down. That's the metaphor. But it's the house of Jacob, so it's the nation that's coming down. And then as you look at repeated words and phrases, you start to get an answer to the why question, right? Because of the way they have treated the poor. They've oppressed. They haven't shown justice. They haven't shown righteousness. So you're starting to get the melodic line of the book right there. What about overall tone? And then we'll be done. Overall tone? Yeah, judgment and terror. Yeah. Judgment and terror. Yep, doom. Yep. So we're not going to try to put it together. We've been working on that all week, and you're going to continue to work on that. But we've got the building blocks. We have some notes on the melodic line of this book, and we can see just by doing these exercises using these tools what the book is about.